Thank you, Mel. I don't know who you were talking about, but let me try to move ahead here because I'm on LA's schedule at this point on how many minutes I get. I could take 10 to talk about our speaker today. This man is one of the most respected and prominent academic medical center leaders, and I'll get to some of the things this medical center does. He is an internist and as well as geriatric medicine, so that means a lot to most of us in this room, I think. Okay? And next, he served on numerous national and international panels related to managed care, cost of care, assessments of the Medicare program. I know we want to hear about that. And served and spent a little time testifying at Congress as well. Moving right along, I got to skip down. Okay. If you get to the university that employs him, I forget the name of it, we have a medical center that healthcare is a future focused at Ohio State, future focused, and I think we may hear a little bit about that in his remarks. It's driven by mission to improve people's lives through innovation, research, education, patient care. Staff of more than 23,000 people full-time at the Ohio State Medical Center. 7 health sciences colleges, on one campus. Thus, there's a lot of collaboration between the different sciences. 18 hospitals affiliated with Ohio State, in addition to other colleges such as College of Dentistry, optometry, and nursing. I could go on and name a few more, but quite a number of colleges. If you look at an organizational chart, it almost makes you dizzy and I wonder when the man sleeps. Let's see. I got one other remark here. 6 faculty members currently elected to the Institute of Medicine and 3 to National Academy of Sciences. Last year, the medical school received 6,188 applications to become freshmen medical school students. You want to guess how many they took? 199 out of 6,188. With all these responsibilities, I keep asking the doctor, do you have any hobbies? Do you have any spare time to do anything else? Well, I find he's an avid swimmer, and he even has a patent on piece of equipment that underwater it transmits music while you're swimming or whatever else you're doing. So there you got it. It's the best I could do. So with that, I will sit down and introduce again our speaker today, Dr. Sheldon Retchin. Sheldon?
Let's see here. Well, thanks, Dave. I really appreciate the opportunity and the honor to speak here this afternoon. Dave and Ann have been so kind and to be hosts for me. I was here 2 weeks ago. Dave actually approached me to talk at the Forum Club a year ago. And when you get that much runway, you got to say yes, because what are you going to say? I'm busy. He gave me so much runway, and then I looked up to see about the Forum Club and realized with the speakers that you get here, I was in incredible company, and of course, this august body, and I knew I was really home. When I got here this morning, I got up in the hotel, and I called and asked for a late checkout, and the receptionist was nice. I didn't want to tell you she wasn't, and she said, well, how late do you want to go? And I said, as late as I can. She says, well, you could stay till 4 p.m., but I have to charge you $55. I said, okay, I'm in. She says, wait a minute. It says here, you're with the Forum Club. She said, no charge. Listen, before I start, I want to tell you, I was a little reticent just a few minutes ago. I you may have seen me get up. I left the room after hearing from the high school students. I was a little daunted, because I got to tell you, when I was in high school, I played no sports, I joined no clubs, I held no office, and I only had one friend. So how about another round for the high school students? I made them promise. I actually gave them my business card, really, so they might hire me. When I got down here yesterday afternoon, I've been in Ohio State for 2 years. I was at Virginia Commonwealth University for about 30 years. My good friend Tom Sneeds here, who was on the board while I was there, and ran the Blues plan for the state of Virginia, took it public, was an incredible insurance executive. We fought over contracts. He always won. Actually, that's a lie. But Tom being in the audience for me is a little daunting. So what I did before here when I saw Tom was here, I went up to him and said, if you ask me any hard questions about health care, I'm going to tell every single one of the people here what your real golf handicap is. So Tom's backed off. One last comment before I get started, and I'm going to talk about health care and what's going on in Washington. We'll get right into the depths of it, but I do want to make a little announcement. I traveled down here with one of my vice presidents from Ohio State yesterday. We landed, and I've been in Columbus for only 2 years. I didn't know when I moved there. I know you, so now you know how bright I am. I didn't realize what cold was. It is so cold in Ohio that when I landed here yesterday, I actually forgot what it feels like to be warm. So I've told the vice president I traveled with this morning, and I do mean this sincerely, I'm not going back. So this is what we're going to do. You all see a display of shells on your table. Underneath one of them is my name. So one of you who picks that up, I'm going home with you. So I'm serious, but let's get started. There's a lot going on in Washington. I spent the last 2 days talking to Congress about health care. Imagine that. It's a royal chocolate mess. We're going to try to sort through a little bit of that. I'll tell you some of the bills that are going through the House right now, some of the personalities that are involved, little politics here and there. Then I'm going to transition and talk about health care landscape in general. Where we're at, what are our choices ahead, and at the end I'm going to make some prognostications. I'll tell you where I think whether the patient is going to survive in terms of health care and what our choices are ahead. So let's get started. This has been a quite a hectic journey, but in the last few days two bills have been going through two committees in the House of Representatives. One in the Ways and Means and one in Energy and Commerce. And they generally have jurisdiction over health care and the health care bill. Both of these bills are obviously aimed and targeted at repealing aspects of the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare and trying to replace it. They're stuck on some of these things. But if you'll notice, I don't know if you're following this on CNN or on Fox or wherever whatever your program is, but there's a lot of infighting. In fact, today I'll tell you, the political scene is this in Washington. We've got four parties, not two, four. And you've got extremes on both sides, left and right, and then in the middle both for the Republicans and the Democrats. And the fascinating thing is today that the Republicans on their right and on the middle are fighting each other. So there's a real concern what's going to get through here after all this milkshake gets done. So the bill looks like this. The first aspect of the bill seeks to overturn one thing, the one thing that is the most onerous aspect of Obamacare that everyone seems to hate, that the Republicans have targeted since 2010 when it was passed. That's the individual mandate. So the individual mandate was established for this purpose, and the way it works is if you have income over $10,000 a year, you're required to buy health insurance on the market. Okay? If you don't buy that health insurance, you get fined, and today it's about $700. The reason behind the individual mandate is because it was to encourage healthy people to buy insurance. That's the idea behind insurance anyway. It's to pool the risk, right? Whether it's auto insurance or health insurance, it's to pool the risk. So the idea is to get healthy people to get health insurance so it'll pay for the sick ones. Now, that sounds it sounds a little outrageous to require people to do this, to require people to have insurance, but this is going to surprise you. The idea behind the individual mandate came from the Heritage Foundation. A very conservative think tank was introduced in 1989 by Stu Butler. The idea was to encourage healthy people to get into the insurance pools and activate the private market. And the individual mandate was seen as a very Republican ideal to get beyond the notion, and this was the other choice, and it keeps creeping back every once in a while, is to have a single-payer system. And I'll get to why that is such an anathema to the American mentality. But so the individual mandate came out of a Republican conservative principle, but was rejected in 1989. And then in 1993, 94, Hillary Clinton tried to get her version of healthcare through. If you remember Harry and Louise commercials that beat that back, part of that had an individual mandate. But the counter to that in the Senate, even then, was they wanted the individual mandate in. There was general consensus about around the idea of getting people personal responsibility. You should own health care insurance. That was a general conservative idea. In fact, it was introduced by Bob Bennett, senator from Utah, in 2007, Republican senator. Then comes along the individual mandate for Romney Care. Mitt Romney puts it into the Massachusetts plan, tells everybody that was really the cornerstone, didn't try to duck it later on when he ran for president, but it became a centerpiece for the Massachusetts plan as well. Then comes 2008, in the primaries. If you remember all of that, guess who was against the individual mandate and fought it hard? A senator from the Midwest named Barack Obama. He fought the individual mandate, and he fought it hard because Hillary and John Edwards both wanted it. So it was a whole change in the landscape around who and where this came from, but the individual mandate came a part of the Affordable Care Act and was passed in 2010. And now they're turning that over. So the individual mandate is such a thorn in the side. That's part of the package that's going through the House today. They're going to replace it with two things. One is tax credits will take place of the subsidies. I'll talk about that in a second. And then this thing called continuous coverage. So here's the idea. And this is the Holy Grail. The Holy Grail that everybody wants to have to activate the private market is to get healthy people to join and get health insurance. Now, let me just back up on that. The reason that's such a problem is, who are the healthy people? The healthy people are 18 to 34-year-olds. Tom Sneed taught me that the nickname for those people are called the young immortals. If you're 20 years old, you think you're never going to get sick. In fact, if among 20-year-olds today, a third of them think dying is optional. So, fast forward to now to Obamacare, and it's failing. So either the fine wasn't stiff enough, or those young immortals did the mathematical calculation, and they're not taking down the insurance. So the tax credits come in, the continuous coverage comes in, the subsidies go away, the exchanges go away in a couple of years, and we're going back to try to enliven this marketplace to get young people to get insurance. I got to tell you, I don't have a lot of faith in this. So the tax credits that are going to be in this bill, tax credits go for anybody by age. It goes up with age. You get more as you get older, but it's independent of income. So that's the good news for all of you who are buying health care today. You're going to get a tax credit if this bill goes through. Here's the bad news. People who are in the lower income of the bracket, what do you think a tax credit is going to do for them? Not much, because God bless America, but 45% of households don't pay taxes. So the tax credit is really not going to help them. It's actually going to help those who have the means anyway. And the problem with that is, as I've told congressmen when I was consulting the last 2 days, is you're asking for trouble. You're going to have a target on your back. There's going to be a billboard in 2018 that you just passed a health care bill for rich people. Not a good idea. So the tax credits, I don't think, are going to make it through the House. If they make it through the House, they're not going to make it through the Senate anyway. But it's just fascinating that it landed on tax credits as an answer for this. It won't work. The second piece they're going to turn back on, Medicaid expansion. So as you know, the Obama plan, Obamacare, expanded Medicaid. Medicaid, if you remember, is the program for the poor. But at that time, childless adults in most states didn't have Medicaid. Obama comes along and says, I'm going to put them on Medicaid, expand Medicaid up to 133% of a federal poverty level, which is about $10,000 a year. And by doing that, I'll get them all on Medicaid. Then comes the Supreme Court, says, you can't do that, makes it optional. So today, 31 states expanded Medicaid, and District of Columbia, 19 didn't. 31 states, including Indiana, where the vice president's governor, and including about 15 red states. So you got to believe when they're rolling back this Medicaid, my governor, Governor Kasich, gets on the airplane, goes to Washington, and meets with President Trump and says, don't roll back my Medicaid. So that's a fight ready to happen. They're also throwing in what Speaker Ryan wants to do there is block grants. So give a chunk of money to the states. And the Republicans, you'll see theme after theme is give the states more flexibility and more choice. But we're going to block grant it. That means we're going to hold and cap the amount that you get. So if you need more money, you eat it. If you save money, you keep it. That's the theme coming out of this plan as well. The third is high-risk pools. So if you're taking away the healthy people, you're not able to get them in, you now have all these sick people. Remember, one of the things that everybody liked about Obamacare was the fact that if you have conditions, preconditions, then you're not going to be turned by insurance. So now the Republicans are putting in a new idea of high-risk pools. They haven't worked before. We'll see if they work now. And then lastly, another component is that I want to get back to. This is a real, a very American heavy choice idea, which is the medical savings account. The idea is this. Let's give the power of choice back to people who have health care. Give them a $5,000 deductible plan. Give them another $5,000 in a medical savings plan. Let them make the choice in terms of what they buy. It's a great idea, except that it's very difficult to make those choices when you don't know the prices. So that's one issue about in terms of transparency. You'll be hearing more of that. So in general, where we're at in politically, the Republican notion is about choice. It's about preserving choice, giving people the power of the purse to make their own choices in terms of health care, putting responsibility on individuals, and giving states more flexibility. The Democrats are about universal coverage. They are very skeptical, even though the market's not working, so they're going to battle over this. And in the end, those town halls are going to get nastier after this. There's nothing, I'm telling you, there's nothing the Republicans can do to stop that. People are going to get angry, and they're going to have to get through this and work through it, and we'll see what happens. But in my view, they're all missing the big point. That's the costs of health care. Let's chat about that for a second. Today, health care, if you throw in long-term care, pharmaceuticals, and out-of-pocket costs, health care costs $3.2 trillion in the United States. That was T, that's a trillion. It's trillion. That's $10,000 per individual. Wait a minute. The news is worse. That's not only $10,000 per individual and $3.2 trillion. That's without 28 million people who still don't have health insurance, even after Obamacare. So we're pretty damn expensive. $10,000 per pop. Not only that, if you compare us with every other developed country in the world, we've got to call it like it is, we're 50% more expensive than the next country in the world in terms of expenditures. That next country is France. Now, I don't want to talk too much about France to this room. I've been to France. You've been to France, I bet you. How many people have been to France? Okay. The problem with, we're sitting here benchmarking off of France, but I've been there just like you. First of all, they're skinny as hell. They smoke a lot. They drive cars the size of coffee tables. And they don't shoot each other. Now, what kind of culture is that? But we're in competition with the rest of the world. And this is becoming a competitive issue for businesses. Let's face it. Increasingly, businesses are putting the burden on their employees with high deductible plans. Today, over half the plans that employers carry for health care are high deductible, deductible plans. Putting more of the burden on employees, making them make the choices, eating through a deductible. They're doing this because they just can't afford it anymore. Health care is just too expensive. For General Motors, $2,500 for every car that they turn out is for health care. For Starbucks, their health care costs more than their coffee beans. So we can't compete unless we get a handle on the costs. Now, I'm not going to give you a solid answer on this, but if you're looking for one, you almost have to look at why are the costs spiraling upwards? For the last 40 years, healthcare costs have been going up at twice the rate of per capita income and GDP. So today, for gross domestic product, healthcare takes up 18% of GDP. And by 2025, it'll crest out at 20% of GDP. There's only one industry in history that's been higher. What is that? Military. Military was at 41% during World War II. The difference is military was a spike, went back down. Today is 3.5% of GDP. So healthcare is going up and up and up every single year. My friends, we're not going to be able to afford it. It's just unsustainable. So we've got to ask ourselves, why are healthcare spiraling upwards like this? Is it supply? Do we have too many doctors? Do we have too many hospitals, too many MRI scanners? Do we put people in the hospital too much? The answer is no, 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 and no. Actually, we have among the fewest doctors in the world per 1,000 population. The only country that's lower is Japan. For hospital beds, we have 125 hospital beds per 100,000 population. 125 admissions per 1,000 population. Germany has 250 hospitalizations per 1,000 people. Median among developed countries is 160. So we're not putting people in the hospital too much. We have less MRI scanners than they do in most parts of the developed world. It's not utilization. What is it? This is where I get in trouble. If you go back to Columbus or you tell anybody, and that includes Tom Snead, if you go back to Richmond, I didn't say it. I'll deny it even though this is recorded. It's prices. Yep. One of the enemies for the cost of health care you're looking at. It's me. I'm responsible for this mess because I argued so hard against Tom Snead when I was running the health system on contracts. I priced it all up. But Americans have very high prices on health care. Now, if you go back, we've tried this before to look and see if we can fix all this. Go back to the mid-1990s. I don't know if you remember this, but there was an explosion of managed care. HMOs came up in the 1990s. And if you remember, a lot of us got put into HMOs, and you had to go to a primary care to get to see a cardiologist, to get into the hospital. You had to go to your primary care physician. Americans didn't like that. If you remember the movie As Good As It Gets with Jack Nicholson and Helen Hunt, and you remember Helen Hunt on the phone trying to get her kid into see a pulmonary specialist. The kid had asthma, 5 years old. She was arguing and screaming. She slammed the receiver down on the phone and said, damn those HMOs. And the theater I was in with my wife stood up and gave her a standing ovation. I looked at my wife and I said, Tracy, it's over. So consumers rejected a primary care. Now, fast forward today, I don't want to embarrass any of you, but I'll ask you for a show of hands. How many of you now have a concierge physician? Okay, check this out now. It's just what we just saw. So we live in a country where consumers rejected primary care for free, and we have others who pay $5,000 for it. God bless America. That's why I love this country. Give yourselves a hand. So we can't afford all this, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know where the answer is going. We're going to have to look for new ways to do it. So I'm going to give you two choices. The Democrats are going to keep coming back to an answer, and the answer would work. I have to admit it would work. It's not what I want. Americans want choice, but this would not be a choice. It's called the private option. That would allow individuals to actually buy Medicare. Medicare is one of the cheapest forms of health care coverage. It would lower the cost immediately, would drive a lot of health plans out of business. If you think the health plans don't know that, believe me, they do, and they will fight that tooth and nail, and they'll win. Here's another choice for you, and this is a big idea I've been trying to sell on the Hill. Let's go ahead and empower consumers. Let's really make it about choice, and let's create a platform. And all you from Silicon Valley, let's do the IBM Watson trick, where people can actually call and say, I've got a $5,000 deductible, and my physician is saying I need a total knee. Where do I go, and do I need it? Today, you can't tell me the answer. I'm smart enough, I couldn't tell it for myself. That is, if you have, how many of you have a Lexus? If you take it to your mechanic, and he comes out and says, it's a $1,000 fix, do you say, I want to know why? It's a carburetor. You say, oh, okay. I don't even know what a carburetor does. We need to empower consumers with knowledge, and that's a big idea. We need to create a platform, and I told the Republicans to do this. Let's invest. It's a moonshot. Probably take 4 or 5 years, but it's a distinctly American idea. So let's go ahead and empower consumers on the choice end, give them their knowledge, show them the probabilities, and yes, believe me, I'll get in trouble for saying this, let's get some price transparency. Then we'll be able to make some choices. Those are the two choices. Private option, or let's give consumers the power of choice. Thank you very much. I'll answer some questions.
Okay, doctor, we have a few. Isn't it likely that either Obamacare will be amended rather than repealed, or that we'll have such a mess that ultimately single payer will be the only option?
That's it. Is that a question or a comment?
Question.
Oh, okay.
It's both.
So, I had another idea. You may love this idea. So, the choices with Obamacare were repeal, replace, or repair. People have talked about that.
Yeah.
I got a fourth one, and this is one I really love. So I don't know if you know this or not, but there was a survey recently that showed that about a third of Americans are confused. They actually don't know that Obamacare is the Affordable Care Act, right? So I had another idea was, let's just rename it. Let's call it Trumpet Care. Now I do think I don't think Americans are going to accept single payer system. Now that said, when your back's against the wall, you're looking at $5,000 deductibles, the prices are going up, it's unsustainable. I could be wrong. I don't see the political will to do that. Bernie Sanders wanted to do it. You see what happened to him. I don't think that wing of the party's got the legs to do it. It's going to have to be some other different. Now, I'd like some sort of hybrid solution on this, but I still like my idea about consumer choice giving me a way to make these diagnostic and therapeutic choices.
What is the future of practicing medicine with the IBM Watson computer as an assistant?
So did that come from one of the students?
No.
Maybe they're afraid of the answer. What's that, ex-IBMer? Okay. Yeah, right. I actually been working a little bit with IBM Watson. It's hard to predict. Today, if it's a computer spitting out a punch card, tomorrow could be a robot looking at me or something. I don't know. I think IBM Watson, as I said, in terms of data, I think that large knowledge bases that can be queried are a real great supplement to healthcare. I think they will potentially lower the cost. I don't think they're going to substitute. I still think people want to see people, but it could take the place of some of those things. And let me give you an example. I'm not sure that if you couldn't train IBM Watson, I'm pretty sure you could do this, to read pathology slides and to read x-rays. So you could replace radiologists and pathologists. That's why I was really gladdened to hear one of the students say, "You're going into ENT." He knows. I don't think they're going to replace otolaryngologists. How old are you? Yeah, maybe before you're finished.
Next question. If you give people choice and they make the wrong choice, doesn't the taxpayer end up paying for it?
So, the taxpayer ends up not only with the residual. There's a law in the books you may know called EMTALA. I don't know if any of you have ever heard of this. EMTALA is about 20 years old, and it requires, if you show up in an emergency room and you're sick, I don't care who you are, where you've come from, whether you've got insurance or not, you got to be treated, and that includes if you need bypass surgery, you're going to get it. Now, that means that if mistakes are made, even on those who don't have insurance, we all pay. So, yeah, there's a nugget of truth in that. And mistakes are made. So, I think so. I'll buy that.
Okay. I have one from a student here. I'm trying to find it. There it is.
Okay.
Do you think there is a foreseeable change in the healthcare system, or do you think any attempts will be blocked? Do you think healthcare belongs in politics? Will it ever change? I think maybe with your remarks, everyone in the room might be able to answer that.
Yeah. So, actually, it gives me a chance to tell you another quick story. But look, when something is 20% of GDP or knocking on 20% of GDP, I don't believe in the power of government to run healthcare or something, and I'm not a communist and I'm not a fascist. I'm ecumenical. I run straight down the middle. But I believe you have to have government interventions, which means perish the thought there might be some politics in that. I think that the government's going to have to play a role in terms of solving this, whether it's solvable in any of the descriptions that I've any of the things I've described or not. I don't know.
Is there any way to reduce drug prices?
So all of you know anybody who's taking medication. Actually, I'm sure none of you do. But by the way, I didn't get a chance. I mean, you really do look marvelous. That's, again, I'm trying to appeal to the person who's going to take me home. The pharma industry is under scrutiny. You'd have to be living in a cave not to know that. Some of the controversies over EpiPens, those kinds of things are just open targets. We need more competition in pharma. Little known. I mean, you'd think, well, gee, isn't generics the answer? Actually, generics, even when they go off patent, because you can change just a little thing in a drug compound, and then you get patent protection. Drug discoveries have several lives. Somehow or another, we need to cut through this. Medications have been such a small part of the health care bill, that it really hasn't been under attack, but I think it will be now, and I'm sure that'll be part of the solution that'll be discussed in Congress.
Isn't it likely that either Obamacare will be amended rather than repealed, or that we'll have such a mess that ultimately single payer will be the only option?
Well,
you kind of already touched on that, but we've had several ask that question, so maybe anything to add?
No, I think I think we've already chosen that we're not going on to the left. Let me add, by the way, single payer system, even if you thought it was attractive, let me tell you what it does. All it does is temporarily get you on another curve. So if you look at Great Britain, you look at Canada, you look at France and Germany, their costs are going up, they're just on a different plane. We're up here, they're down here. So we're not going to cross with each other yet, but I don't think that the single payer system is the only answer. I think some sort of an insurance product in a hybrid situation, maybe with more public options. But I always have believed in the power of the private sector. I believe there's an answer there. I just think we need some closure of the information asymmetry. So just let me comment on that, this information gap. Won a Nobel Prize in the early 60s, and it was called information asymmetry. And it was about when a consumer doesn't have the knowledge to make the right choice, they make the wrong choice. But you know what industry they were looking at? It was used cars. And he showed that it was an ineffective, inefficient market. And that when you gave more information to consumers, and a lot more information, they actually make good choices. I got to tell you, their choices couldn't be any worse. When you're blind and have no information about price and value, how are you supposed to make the right choice? What do you do now? You say one of two things. You ask your doctor, who should I see for my total knee and do I need it? Or you ask your best friend that you're playing golf with, hey, who did your knee? Maybe I'll do it. Did you like them? That's really not the best way to make choices, especially when your life depends on it. So I think we need more knowledge to close this information asymmetry.
Here's a fun question for you.
I've been waiting.
I'm chuckling. Seriously, if ACA is so great, why aren't members of Congress on that plan?
Yeah, we've all talked about that. I think that they're going to be – it's not me that's going to duck that question. It's Congress.
Yeah. Okay. One other question regarding tax credits. If that happens, would they be refundable rather than a tax credit in the event that there's a necessity there?
Yeah, so they've talked about these being refundable tax credits. Just remember again, though, you've got somebody who doesn't pay taxes, gets a tax credit, so they get an advance.
Right.
How do you claw that back? And if you're clawing it back, then what have you really done?
Yeah.
Somebody's tried to purchase a health care policy with money they don't have and now they owe. It's going to be a mess. I don't think that's going to work.
Another issue is there are several questions on this. Insurance, health insurance over state borders, will that happen?
Yeah, I think that will happen. Now, the health plans don't like that. I mean, listen, whatever solves health care, if there's somebody that likes it, then they didn't do a very good job. So they're going to be all stakeholders, all constituents. You can't have something that's a runaway train like this that somebody's going to really like. So, yeah, no, I think it'll happen because it doesn't make sense otherwise. I think health plans will compete with each other just like utility companies do, and I think the Republicans want that so bad, and certainly I've heard that from the president. So I will say the one thing the president has done for me, I was just talking about this earlier, is I finally have somebody in the White House who has a comb-over. So I've greatly appreciated having the first comb over as something I can aspire to. Thank you.
That's a good one. I'll try this one. Why are all Americans really against nationalized health care? It seems like maybe not all, but that's the question all.
Well, I really think it comes down to America. You know, listen, I gave you the comparison with France. American culture is different, and we're different. we like our choice. We want to preserve our choice. We don't want somebody to tell us what to do, even if it's going to cost us. So I think really the preservation of choice is a distinctly American quality. That's why when I said the big idea about creating this knowledge platform through IBM Watson and making this basically a moonshot initiative, I meant it. Listen, the whole world looks at us. We've got a great healthcare system. For some, it's just too expensive. I think if we did have that database, and what greater time than now with the power of the supercomputer? We've got Silicon Valley. We've got twins who are first year at Columbia. That's why I got to keep working for another 10 years. Unless we can work out, maybe before we leave here, we can do some tuition swapping. I think we've got that generation, the generation of millennials, understand computers and apps. I mean, my kids are writing apps for ridiculous stuff. I keep telling them, will you please invent something that'll make some money and drop out? Just like Mark Zuckerberg, Bill Gates. Come on, be a college dropout and make some money. Anyway, I have great faith in the answers ahead.
You've been outstanding answering a lot of different questions, and I have one to finish up with that you're going to love. It's a zinger. Why don't our universities produce more doctors?
Well, it's very expensive for us to train doctors. I keep arguing with the state legislature. I did it in Virginia, and I do it in Ohio. You give us more money, we can train more doctors. I think we've got a lot of doctors here. We've got more on the way, I can see here, if they'll just not join so many clubs and play so many sports. We'll get more doctors.
Thank you, Sheldon. Okay, great.
Oh, yeah.